Coming to you from the bottom of Lake Agassiz. Welcome to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. The last weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Well, take that back. No, we have one more weekend. Yep, we do. We have next weekend, the 26th. So I shouldn't be jumping too far ahead in welcoming in August. And nobody, I don't think people really, really anticipate August. I should introduce myself. I'm Doug Lear, an outreach biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And each weekend we walk you through the outdoors topics and dig a little bit deeper into some of the issues. In fact, we're going to do that with Jerry Weigel here in just a moment, talk about stalking in North Dakota, stalking of fish, not the criminal stalking. I don't know why my mind is going down that direction right now, but we'll be talking with Jerry Weigel about stalking fish in North Dakota in just a couple of moments. But I was mentioning about August, and we're a couple of weeks away from August, and as warm and enjoyable as August can be, there's always just this, I don't know, back of your mind reality that summer in August is slipping away. And maybe that's why the anticipation of August isn't so much about I can't wait for it to be August as it is the reality of June and July are behind us. But you know what? Enough of lamenting what is going to be behind us. Let's enjoy the summer of 2014 for the here and now and the right now. And we'll be bringing you a Minnesota Outdoors Report with CJ Johnson, a Central Dakota Outdoors Report with Pat Stockdale. But before we do that, Jerry Weigel is with the North Dakota Game and Fish Department and Fisheries Production. And Jerry Weigel puts on thousands of miles every spring, picking up trout in Wyoming, bringing them to Woodhaven Pond in Fargo. That's just part of Jerry's everyday regular routine of work, is putting on thousands of miles hauling fish across the prairies so that we can enjoy them. Jerry, let's talk about stocking of fish in North Dakota, maybe in a historical perspective, because I think that's probably a good place to start when we talk about stocking of where have we been before we get into where are we at or where we're going.
Well, there was document stockings actually back in the turn of the century, but it probably wasn't until the 50s, 40s and 50s of when some hatchery systems were talked about, some old historical hatcheries at Lake Lisbon, Turtle Mountains had an old historical hatchery, and then Spirit Lake. Those are probably some of the first ones, but the real fish stocking programs really got on a roll when the federal government built the Garrison Dam National Fish Hatchery at Riverdale and the Valley City National Fish Hatchery in the 50s. And from that point forward, fish production really was available on an annual basis. And then in the late 80s, the department invested several million dollars expanding some facilities at Garrison Dam, both some pond production and also a trout and salmon rearing facility. So we're fortunate to have some really good fish production capability in the state.
Very interesting to learn, because myself and my generation grew up with fish hatcheries. In fact, I worked at the Valley City Wetlands District, which is north of Valley City, and housed in the same building as the Valley City Bald Hill Dam National Fish Hatchery. And understanding from looking at the buildings from when I first became aware of it, I remember actually when I was in, I don't know, whatever grade in Lemoore, we took a tour of the Valley City Fish Hatchery, probably sometime in the early 80s. And you just kind of assumed as a kid that, well, there's fish hatcheries and they're all over the place and they've always been here. And then you start to realize that, well, these buildings, as you get a little bit older, and then when I worked as a summer temporary for the Wetlands District, going, these have not been around forever. So it's good to start off with the history of that. And along the way, Jerry, I think one of the more modern, the real contemporary issues that have popped up was the devastation, especially at the Garrison Dam National Fish Hatchery, and the flooding of the Valley City National Fish Hatchery as well. There's been a lot of issues with water because of their proximity.
Yes. Yeah, the flood of 2011, when they operated the spillway gates, which have historically never been operated, it dramatically changed the old spillway lake below the spillway gates there, which was our main water source for these 40 acre and a half ponds we call the East Unit that the department built. And by and large, our intake was high and dry. So for the last two seasons since the flood, we've just rented pumps to get water to fill those ponds. And we just finished up a $500,000 project to permanently get our water supply operation back. And so we're good to go again, because we're definitely at a time where we need all production ponds. We just can't afford to have some sitting idle.
Jerry Weigel, Fisheries Production Supervisor for your North Dakota Game and Fish Department, talking about stocking and the importance of stocking. And Jerry, let's talk about that level of distribution for the importance of fish hatcheries and moving fish to different locations and how important these fish hatcheries are for your work.
Generally the hatchery production has the least investment in terms of financial or staff time, but we also, as to balance it out, one thing we've done over the years with yellow perch in particular is we can go out and catch them pre-spawn when they still have the eggs in them, and this is right at ice out, and we can round up, say, maybe several dozen to 100 pairs of males and female perch, throw them in a new lake, and usually they spawn naturally there that spring. And that fall you've got your year class of young perch, which would be the same as if we had raised those young perch and introduced them as fingerlings. And we do quite a bit of that, especially the last few years. There's been just such a growth of fishing waters. I'm sure everybody notices a lot of water, a lot of raised roads and all that. Well, the good side, the upside of that is it's literally doubled our fishing waters across the state.
I think people might be pleasantly surprised at the expansion of fishable waters in North Dakota. Again, I speak to my generation of not realizing, and the younger generations, how good we have it right now. When I stop and think about fishing in the 80s and the number of lakes and sloughs and ponds that we had, I've told the story about fishing in the 60s before a lot of the dams and reservoirs were as popular as they are now, before some of them even existed. Fishing is good. Jerry Weigel, how many fisheries are we managing in North Dakota? How many are we stocking? He'll answer these questions and more on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Still to come on this weekend edition of Outdoors Live, we'll bring you a Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stockdale. CJ Johnson will get you caught up on the fishing activity in Minnesota as well. Don't forget, you can email me outdoorslive@gmail.com, outdoorslive@gmail.com. And this program is podcast. A big thank you goes out to Bob Harris for podcasting this program at KFGO.com. Check out the blog on KFGO.com for outdoors updates throughout the week as well. Jerry Weigel is the fisheries production supervisor for your North Dakota Game and Fish. But if you missed the first part of the program, we talked about the history of stocking, and kind of interesting, even for myself as a biologist and a North Dakota native, of how stocking really came onto the scene in the modern days in the 70s and the 80s. Prior to the national fish hatcheries, there wasn't quite as much stocking. And when we look at the fisheries that we have in North Dakota, Jerry, how many fisheries are we managing and how many are we stocking? I think myself, and I think probably our listeners, will be pleasantly surprised as well.
Maybe just a little bit of history there is, when you go through like the 70s and 80s and early 90s, what we call the normal fishing waters, we had about 160 fishing waters across the state. This spring, we'll actually have 415 fishing waters that are ready to go, have catchable fish in them, and we actually probably got another 20 that we're still getting going, have juvenile fish and not started yet. And of those, stocking wise, we probably stock half of them. Certainly the goal is, if we can get a lake to where it either has naturally reproducing fish on its own, that's ideal. Even like Lake Sakakawea, I would say more years we don't stock it with, say, walleyes than what we do. Devil's Lake, the last, it's got to be 6-8 years now, we haven't stocked any walleyes in the main Devil's Lake. But when you get species like trout and salmon, of course, the only way they're out there is we stock them. So those are, of course, stocked annually. And so any of those lakes that are like a trout lake, they got to get their trout every year.
We're taking you inside the biology and the fisheries management of stocking in North Dakota with Jerry Weigel. Jerry, let's, I guess, from your perspective or relaying to our listeners, how do you determine what fish are going where and in what lake?
Well, you know, the biologists, they kind of work with the lake necessarily with the physical layout of it. Some lakes, like with trout, you generally want a little bit deeper, cooler lake, which there's not so very many of them. They're typically going to be reservoirs. When it comes to walleyes now, it generally takes 2 to 3 years to get catchable size with walleyes. So if you have a lake that winter kills every couple of years, you'd never get a walleye to a size that the anglers could actually harvest them. So in lakes like that, if we determine that we really want to manage that water because it's close to a population or something, we'd either see about going with trout, which we could provide a catchable fish every spring, or northern pike is another one. And that's where people, they wonder why we stock northern pike. Well, there's just some lakes, if you want fish to catch, that's the only thing that's going to provide a fishery, and that's what we got to, that's what we're all about. And as when you ask about the species mix, it isn't so much, we're trying to create these cool fisheries, that we get a kick out of. We really want to produce something that the angler is going to get a return, on their public investment, so.
He's Jerry Weigel. I'm Doug Lear. This is the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Talking stalking with Jerry, stalking as in fish. Why should I laugh? It's a very serious subject when it comes to the criminal aspect of stalking. Maybe that just something that the double meaning of the word is striking me as a little bit, because I've talked about fish stalking for literally decades in a lot of my life. But when we talk about this kind of stalking, where most people are so familiar with the stalking of perch, pike, walleye, but there's some unique different species that are produced and stocked in North Dakota, isn't there, Jerry?
Right. Yeah. Of course, we do like salmon in Lake Sakakawea. We do trout in about 40 lakes across the state. Several of the trout stockings, too, are small urban ponds that we know are going to winter kill each year, but they provide a great fishery for school kids, elderly, easy access, right in town type things. And then over the course of the year, of course, we have a handful of lakes that we stock with crappie. We do some largemouth bass to supplement some of those. Occasionally, we'll do some trades with other states and bring in like muskies, tiger muskie and pure muskie. Right now, we're working with a private producer in South Dakota to bring in some pure muskie and providing him some walleye fry. In addition to that, we do bluegills, the perch. Some of the pan species, like we talked earlier, will go and trap adult species and then relocate them, because right now the big demand at the hatchery is walleyes. We have such a demand with walleyes, and just like a farmer's crop, you can't just have a crop of oats behind a crop of wheat. You either pick one or the other, and we're kind of forced to do the same thing and make choices. And walleye, of course, is top dog right now for what we try to go to.
Personally, Jerry, I find it fascinating when you look at the geology of North Dakota and just start to see the benefits of stocking, transplanting, populating with different species, and really some of these mom and pop sloughs that may never have been a viable variety fishery without the stocking potential.
Right. Yeah. If you'd go back to, if this was, a geological time where there really wasn't hatchery production and the lakes would get whatever species are out there, there would be quite a few northern pike fisheries. There'd be lots of sticklebacks and fathead minnows and mud puppies, but there'd be no trout, no salmon, and actually even walleyes. Walleyes would only be in lakes that they would never winter kill from, and they aren't quite the robust travelers that, let's say, northern pike are. Folks have noticed, with the running water and flooding, you'll see fish swimming, and a lot of times they're probably northern pike or white sucker. Those are the two species that really find a way to prolifically migrate around, but that would be it. So if it were not for us either putting this handful of adult perch to kind of seed a lake, or us throwing in our little walleye fingerlings and things, at least to kickstart those lakes, that's what gets them in there in the first place.
A fascinating look into the history and the biology of Stocking Fish in North Dakota. Jerry Weigel, thank you so much for that in-depth insight into it. Because even myself as a biologist, and as I mentioned earlier on in the program, working for the Wetlands District in Valley City two different times, housed right next door to the fish hatchery, we just take things for granted. And that's human nature. But while we can take it for granted, we do well to visit and to dig a little bit deeper. And we appreciate Jerry Weigel for taking us inside the doors and inside the minds of fish hatcheries and fish stocking in North Dakota. But where are people fishing? What are they finding? Across the plains of North Dakota, Pat Stockdale with the Central Dakota Outdoors Report is next on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Just a couple of moments here, we're going to be bringing you your Central Dakota Outdoors Report with Pat Stockdale, and then a Minnesota Outdoors Report with CJ Johnson as well. Before we do that, I wanted to mention a couple of things here. Number one, you've heard a lot about the Devil's Lake fishing bust. Five adults cited for 100 walleyes over the possession limit. And then there was another one with eight individuals, six apprehended in North Dakota, with 84 walleyes over the possession limit. And I took a call from a friend of a friend and asking about citations and charges and confiscation. And it can be very complicated. One thing I want to explain is when people say that the fine should be more and the judge sets the fine. And unless there's a mandatory appearance, you can pay the bond and not have to show up for court unless there's a mandatory appearance. Some violations require a mandatory appearance. Some, if they reach a certain level of number of fish taken or number of deer taken, a mandatory appearance may be required. If there's not a mandatory appearance, it's similar to getting a citation of a different sort, not in terms of severity, but if you get a speeding ticket, you have the right to go to court. You send in your ticket with the money and you waive your right to court, and that is your guilty plea. When it comes to seizure and confiscation, if a boat is used and you're in the boat for the violation of the law of taking 250 walleye over the limit, the game warden can seize that boat as evidence. It's up to his discretion. He has to have a place for the boat and how to keep the boat. If it's a gross enough situation, that can be done. Same thing with deer. If the pickup is used and there's a pickup full of deer, that pickup can be seized as evidence and showing the deer in the back of the truck with the blood and that kind of a scenario. Or it can be what's called green sheeted, where that pickup or that boat would be able to be produced as evidence. Then it's up to the judge. If the judge feels that the violation warrants confiscation and turning that pickup boat, that equipment, over to the court, to the state, and then it could be sold at a wrap auction. Now, there's a textbook way to explain all of that, but I also tell people that it's like if someone uses a gun in an assault, they don't just turn the gun over to the party after and say, here, you can have your gun back. It's up to the judge to determine whether or not they get that tool back. It can be seized as evidence. If a baseball bat's used in an assault, that bat would be seized and used as evidence in court. So again, probably the biggest point that I want to make is that it's not up to a game warden what the fine is. It's not up to the game warden whether or not a boat should be turned over to the state. That does come down to the judge. The game warden writes the citation. The state's attorney decides whether or not those charges warrant a case being filed. The state's attorney can decline the case. The state's attorney can move forward with the prosecution of the case. The judge decides whether they're guilty or not. The judge can decide, you hear that in big cases all the time, whether or not they accept a guilty plea or not. It can get very complicated, and there's not a one-size-fits-all. What I would encourage you to do is, if you do have questions, contact the state's attorney in the county where it happened and have them explain to you. Contact law enforcement and have them explain to you. It's a big, big, big piece of pie to chew on, to cut. But it is something that often people have mistaken assumptions over. And hopefully we were able to clear a little bit of that up before we slide into a Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stockdill. Pat, what's cooking outdoors this week?
Welcome to the Central Dakota Outdoors Report, a look at fishing and outdoor activities throughout eastern North Dakota and the Missouri River system. Anglers, this will sound familiar, but Devil's Lake remains pretty amazing for its fishing opportunities. Try 14 to 24 feet using spinners and night crawlers or slip bobbers and leeches over submerged vegetation for walleye. A few bigger fish are still coming from shallow water using crankbaits. In general, overall success remains good throughout much of the lake. Lake Ashtabula is producing a decent walleye bite with some limits. Most walleye are running about 17 inches in length. Work shallow. Anglers could also find good panfish success with an occasional pike. Jamestown Reservoir anglers are looking at a late evening bite with a nice mix of walleye and crappie. Pipestem Reservoir has improving perch, walleye, and crappie success, while there's continued bass activity over on Spiritwood Lake. Continued good reports are coming from small area lakes across Richland, Sargent, Lemoore, McIntosh, and South Central and Southeastern North Dakota lakes. Walleye anglers are catching fish using a variety of techniques along weed edges in 10 to 15 feet. Pike are mixed in with the walleye and biting on the same presentations, but you might also want to mix it up with bare jig heads or bright daredevils for the pike. The Red River is back in its banks from Wahpeton through Fargo, and access, as well as fishing, is improving. However, flows remain faster than normal on the Cheyenne River in Valley City and down to Catherine, over to Kindred, and West Fargo. However, a few anglers are still finding bass, walleye, pike, and catfish by targeting slower current and backwater areas. Red River catfishing is best near feeder creeks and drains where fish are coming up from snags and deep holes. Cutbait goldeye remains the best bait, but you might also want to try catfish powerbait just for a little bit of a variety if the bite is light. With continued boating activity on the recreational aspect on the Missouri River around Bismarck Mandan, anglers are heading south on Lake Oahe. There, they're finding walleye success around Cattail and Langlers Bays, the Prairie Knights Casino area, and State Line. There's continued walleye success on the Missouri River tail race from boats during the day, with the bigger fish still coming upstream in the chutes. Try three-way swivels with plastics or crankbaits. Some walleye success remains downriver with jigs or Lindy rigs and night crawlers, but you might also want to try spinners and bottom bouncers. There are limited trout and salmon numbers in the river, but good catfish success in the chutes. River shore fishing is better in the evening casting crankbaits. Try live bait around the boat ramp during the day, however. The 38th Annual North Dakota Governor's Cup was on Lake Sakakawea July 18th and 19th, headquartered at Fort Stevenson State Park, so the east end of the Big Lake is busy. Anglers pre-fishing for the tournament were finding some smaller walleye in the shallow, but success is a bit slower for the bigger fish. Lake Audubon is also producing some small walleye.
We always appreciate Pat Stockdill with our Central Dakota Outdoors Report. You read her work in the Jamestown Sun. You read it in Dakota Country Magazine, Minnesota Outdoor News, a lot of different mediums. And she's a very respected outdoors communicator, is Pat Stockdill. And she joins us each week with a Central Dakota Outdoors Report. Coming up next on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live, we check in with CJ Johnson in Minnesota, where people are going, what they're doing on the mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the last shot for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. A quick reminder, if you have missed any of the programming you'd like to catch up on Outdoors Live, it's podcast, with a thank you to Bob Harris for doing that at kfgo.com. And we blog at kfgo.com as well. A couple of things that you'll find on the blog. The next hunting guide and outfitter test in North Dakota has been set for August 9th at 1 p.m. Now, it's given periodically for anyone that wants to become a legal, licensed hunting guide or outfitter in the state of North Dakota. So you pass the written exam, and then to become a licensed guide, you need a background check pass from any criminal and game and fish violations. You have to have certification in CPR, standard first aid, and then be contracted with a licensed hunting outfitter. The outfitter eligibility requirements include being the guide, plus you must have held a hunting guide license for 2 years and proof of liability insurance. If you want to take the hunting guide and outfitter test in North Dakota, you call the Game and Fish Department Enforcement Office, 328-6604, to get registered. And you'll be taking that exam. Right now, though, before you do that, we need to shift gears just a little bit. And now, folks, it's time to take a look east of the Red River, across the Lakes region and across Minnesota, to get an update on Minnesota's outdoors. When we do that, we call on our good friend CJ Johnson. He is a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. He has spent his career covering the outdoors. I mean, his career ain't over yet. He's still covering the outdoors for Minnesota. And we welcome CJ Johnson back to the program. CJ, how are we doing? How's things looking outdoors in Minnesota, my friend?
Well, a lot better than about a week or 2 weeks ago, because summer seems to arrive. I heard it was summer was scheduled for July 7th and 8th, but it got here early, so we're doing good. Joe Henry up at Lake of the Woods says fishing is steady this week, especially as the weather and water levels are still fluctuating just a bit up there. He says drifting with spinners seems to be the go-to method right now. You can try a Long Point, Zippel Bay, and the Grayston Reefs, as well as Morris Point to Pine Island. They seem to be producing most of them up on Lake of the Woods right now. Joe says trolling or casting crankbaits in shallow water is the best method right now as well for walleyes. That's about 10 feet or less at this point. It says jigs and spinners that are gold or pink in color, and tip them with a crawler or a leech. They seem to be producing the most in the Lake of the Woods area. Nathan Campbell says after a week-long cold spell last week in the Park Rapids area, that Mother Nature is now looking to give them temperatures that look like a bit like summer at least. Nathan says midsummer means warm water and aggressive evening and nighttime, especially fishing for walleyes. He says this time of year and water temperatures calls for use of a Rapala, Wally Diver, Reef Runner, Shad's Tower crankbaits, you know. And if you know what habitat to look for, those lures will put more and more eyes in the boat at this time of the year. Guide Chris Tudyk reports the south end of Mille Lacs is doing great right now in deep gravel, 25 to 31 feet down for walleyes and bobbers, or lead core in the deeper water than that, as a matter of fact. The north end sand on the brake lines also seems to be good right now. Bobber fishing on the rock reefs in the evenings is going well. Again, Mille Lacs guy Jeff Hansen says the fishing has also been good on the mid-lake mud plants and gravel bars during the daytime, 27 to 31 feet down. Those are the areas that I like to fish when I'm up on Mille Lacs. Beth Fisher in the Wilmer area says the unusual weather patterns aren't having this year make very much fun right now, but fishermen aren't finding the fish in their normal summer spots, mainly because of high water, cooler temperature around the Wilmer area. She does say, however, as of last week, the Big Candy Yulhai Lake has reached its first active walleye time. That usually happens earlier in the spring. Anglers are heading out there with leeches and crawlers literally in 4 to 6 feet of water right now. That's kind of unheard of this time of the year for walleye. Green Lake, Eagle Lake, Lake Florida, Lake Andrew are putting some walleye in the boat, but Big Candy Yulhai seems to be doing the best. Emily Schneider says it has been a very interesting weather week in Otter Tail Lakes country last weekend. She said the weekend temperatures had dropped, and instead of T-shirts and shorts, they had on jeans and jackets. But the fishing was still good if you knew where to look and what bait to use. And that is, walleyes are being found 10 to 20 feet down using jigs and minnows and snells with leeches or minnows in depths of 15 to 20 feet. And weed lines is where northern pike seem to be in the Otter Tail Lakes area. And bass are being caught using spinnerbaits and jigs with minnows near docks at water depths of about 8 feet right at this moment. All of that in the Otter Tail Lakes country. Doug, I didn't hear from Becca Art in Detroit Lakes this week. I think fishing is so good up in DL that she'd rather be wetting the line than talking about it. Mm-hmm. However, The old saying, a bad day of fishing always beats a good day of work, has always been true to me. And another truism that I support becomes more and more true as we watch Congress take more and more recesses and timeouts, kind of like preschool children, that blame the other party for not getting anything done. But any other quote that's a favorite of mine comes from Will Rogers, as do many. And he said, I don't make jokes. I just watch the government and report the facts. Oopsie. Remember, the fishing's always great. It's catching what you got to work on.
No doubt about it. And I love the reports. We appreciate C.J. Johnson with his accessibility and his insight to where people are going, what they're doing, and what they're finding, or maybe what they're not finding, mixed in with a little humor as well. He's a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. C.J., thanks so much for your time, my friend.
You betcha. Doug, anytime.
Perfect. Love it. And we do always appreciate, the conversations that we get to have with C.J. Johnson each week. The next Fur Harvester classes have been scheduled for North Dakota. There's going to be a Fur Harvester Education class. It's part of the North Dakota Cooperative Fur Harvester Education Program. It's going to be one in Bismarck and Jamestown, August 12th, 14th, and 16th. Fur Harvester Education classes, Jamestown, 12th, 14th, and 16th of August. Also one in Velva on August 19th, 21st, and 23rd. Audubon National Wildlife Refuge, September 16th, 18th, and 20th. They're free, and they're 16-hour courses completed over a three-day period. Students learn about traps, trapping, snaring techniques, fur bearer biology, fur care. There's also a field day where the students get to make a variety of land, water, and snare sets. If you want to learn more, you can sign up through the Game and Fish Department website. And this information is all posted at kfgo.com as well. That is the last cast for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live. A big thank you goes out to Bob Harris. He's the executive producer of the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Until next time, I'm Doug Lear, reminding you, as always, keep your lines tight and your powder dry. Have a great one out there.